to have our speaker, and it is my pleasure to introduce our main speaker for the evening. Please help me welcome Vivian St. L.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I'm Vivian, and I am an alcoholic. And I already got permission from a man here. Feel the power. He used to say that in meetings that I went to, and when I would hear that, I'm Vivian, I'm an alcoholic, and feel the power. There's a power in this room. All of you are amazing. You know, we are not a glum lot, and you have proved that tonight. Am I too loud? Okay. I talk loud anyway. Anyway, I have been nervous all day long. I've had butterflies. You think I've never spoken in a meeting, but I've never spoken in a meeting this big. I have to tell you that if you're new and fairly new, you don't ever have to drink again. That's what I was told when I got here. And they didn't exactly tell me to sit down and shut up, but I was told by the first sponsor I had that I needed to watch and listen. You know, and I have to say that I was born a very long time ago, and I got 40 years of sobriety this year. St. Patrick's Day, as a matter of fact. Who gets sober on St. Patrick's Day? Somebody who's about ready to kill herself. And that's what happened, you know. And then I started drinking when I was 16. So I was 37 when I hit the doors. So now you know how old I am. And all I noted that what I figured out when I had 40 years, how can you be 40 years twice in a lifetime? I was 40 years old, and now I'm 40 years sober. And I'm just here to tell you what I've heard everybody say. If you don't drink and you don't die, you got a chance. And I needed all the chances I could get when I got here. I had a family that was pretty decent, but I just didn't know it. And I always felt less than. And I remember when we went to church, I already knew I was going to hell. And my dad, I was the oldest of two girls. I already knew that I wasn't a boy, so I wasn't liked that much. And he always called me the black sheep, which turned out to be true because I became the alcoholic in the family. And as time went on, because he was in the military and we moved around to places like Olathe, Kansas, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. I was born in San Antonio, Texas, but that's not my home. My home is here in Fresno. I sobered up here in 1985. And all I know is that that's only by the grace of God and the help of you people. I have watched the grace of God and the help of you people tonight. You have already touched my heart in so many ways. I've heard somebody say in this program that this is like winning the lottery. And for me, it truly has been. Although there have been so many things that have happened over the years. You know, I like to talk about what it was like is not just my drunk-a-log. My drunk-a-log was pretty nasty. You know, most of you know that I was married 5 times before I got here. And it took the 6th time. I was married to a man in the program, and the last name is STL, is for St. Louis. I got to become a saint. That's at the 6th marriage. But I was in AA by that time. But it took a lot of years. It took me 21 years of drinking and falling on my face, and I even got thrown out of the silver dollar for dancing on the tables. That was years ago. Some of you have known me from way back, and some of you are new. And there's somebody else in this program who talks about my new old friends, and you are all my new old friends. I walked in this room tonight, and I'm thinking, oh my God, we are not a religious program. It's a spiritual program. But I had a come to Jesus moment. Because I see you, those that I've known for so long, and those that I know that are coming up behind. was thank God I was behind somebody and that there were people here that were already doing the deal, and I wasn't sure I wanted the deal. In 1982, I put myself in the ark, and I learned quickly that if I listened to the little things that we went into these little classrooms, and if I could answer all the questions, then they'd pat me on the head, and then when it was all over, they'd send you away. I went away for 6 months and drank. And I went back to one of those husbands. And that is the disease. You know, the alcoholism is I, self, and me. And that's all it was about for years. It was always all about what I wanted, what Vivian was going to do. And I always thought, too, that it was about material stuff, how I looked. You know, in the early days, I was in public relations and advertising. Oh, don't you know? I had to be top-notch, and I had to be good at everything. And come to find out, I was just a drunk. You know, I became the first woman of the Fresno Advertising Federation. You know, and that was scary. That was scary back in 1978. That was 7 years before I really got here. And I remember after I got sober, they invited me back for a luncheon where they have everybody come after years of service. And I got up and I said, I'm Vivian, I'm an alcoholic. You know, but they already knew. Because when I was the president of the group, when we had luncheons, we always were somewhere where there was a bar that was open. That was the whole deal. That's what we did. You know, and I was in the advertising business, for God's sake. You know, I had to do that so I could get along with clients. But I didn't know how bad my disease was. I did not know how bad my disease was. You know, that ease and comfort of alcohol, for me anyway, I never liked it, the taste of it, but I liked what it made me feel like. I liked what it did for me. I thought I was the belle of the ball. I thought I was the queen of the party. And I was on air until I wasn't on air. And then I would get sloppy drunk because I didn't have an in-between. And I drank. I didn't drink because of anything my parents did. For new people. I did not drink because of people, places, and things. I drank because I'm alcoholic. I have the disease of alcoholism, which is the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And my mind was obsessed. I was obsessed with that drink. I was obsessed with that drink so that you know that that first husband and I had my oldest son, and then I divorced him 2 years later. But then my second husband, I had my younger son. And in those years, my drinking became more important than being a mother. The younger one went to his father. The older one, my parents had come to California, and they said they were taking him on a vacation, and they took him to Texas. And the next thing I knew, I was being served guardianship papers. And so they had him. But I had to drink. I continued to drink, because that was way before I sobered up. But I, like I said, I went to the ARC in 1982. And then between 82 and 85, they say that once you get information about Alcoholics Anonymous, it will screw with your drinking. And it started to screw with my thinking. And when I would come to meetings, sometimes dry, sometimes drunk. And there was a lady in those meetings who followed me for 3 years. She followed me everywhere. I thought, who in the hell is she? And what does she want? But what was happening is every time I heard you talk, I was hearing something I needed to hear, but I didn't know it. I was very delusional and very desperate. But I wasn't sure I was desperate enough to get what you had. I didn't know. You know, because I didn't have any coping skills. I left home early because I didn't like what they were doing. And I never had any close friends because of the way we moved around. So I didn't have anybody carry through. My grandparents were dead by the time I was 5. So there was no close relationship. And I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything turns into a close relationship. I'm telling you, they know it all. And But I get here, and in those 3 years, I'm going in and out. I remember going to meetings at the VA hospital, and there were a great few women there that are still around in this program, and I kept watching them. You know, that watch and listen stuff works good. As I was told, you know, stick with the winners. I have no idea who the winners were, but I certainly wasn't one. But at the same time, you said, go where we go, do what we do, and you'll get what we got. Well, that sounds pretty simple, except when you're a hardhead. And I got in here, and in those first 3 years of going back and forth, after a while, that last husband at that time, I had decided one day that everything was, my life was just crap. And I had decided that it was going to be over. And I had decided, do I wanted to take my life? Because I figured no one really cared, and no one would really know. So I went on a mission that day, and I put on my St. Patrick's Day dress, went to church, got in the car. I had taken everything I could take, drank everything I could drink. And the lady that had been following me, I happened to have her phone number. I drove to her house, and she wasn't there. So I went and passed out at the corner of William Shaw and another woman who I had met in the program. We worked at the Gloria Marshall Figure Salon. And she was the nutritionist, and I called her, and she was going to an AA birthday party. And she came and got me and took me across town, barefoot in my jeans, and they put me in the acute psychiatric unit. And I walked in there and I thought, holy crap, I don't belong here. I thought it was like a psycho movie. Second thought was, oh yeah, you do belong here. Third thought is, they're not going to let you go. And then she showed up, and another lady came with her, and another gentleman from a church showed up. And when he walked in, he said to me, Vivian, you're worth saving. I can tell you today, after reading the doctor's opinion, and knowing that there is a solution, I know now that at that moment, I knew to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. And I burst into tears. You know, I used to be, I thought I was tough and strong, and I found out that I wasn't any of that. I found out that I was alcoholic and that I didn't know how to live life. I had no coping skills. I thought I did. I'd gone to college. I went to City College, I went to Fresno State. That doesn't mean nothing. I heard you talking about you can have a head full of knowledge and a belly full of booze, and that's not going to get cut it. And that's certainly true. But that was my start to my real sobriety. And this lady, I didn't even have 36 hours because they released me. And she took me to a 10, 11, and 12-step meeting at San Joaquin Memorial. I believe it was a Monday or a Tuesday night. And I didn't have 36 hours. These people in that room were doing the 10, 11, and 12-step. And the man that was supposed to continue to be the secretary had to leave because he was getting married and going to the foothills. And Carol goes, Vivian will be glad to do that, and I'll back her up. They took me. They did not even hesitate. They did not even ask any questions. They took me. My first 6 months, I was showing up to secretary a meeting. I was either making brownies, cookies, or something, because I was so excited to be with people. And you were sober people. Of course, I hadn't understood the depth of being sober at that time. Because I can honestly tell you that at 4.5 years without a drink, I was still not drinking, but I was doing things outside. I'd come to a meeting, I'd go outside and do what I wanted to do, which meant living crazy like I used to, like I was still doing. And I'm here to tell you that unless you get in here and you jump in with both feet and you get that fire under your ass, that doesn't work for very long. But for 4.5 years, I was going by my fingernails. At 4.5 years, because I had not done the work, and she used to always tell me, Vivian, you will pay the consequences of your own actions. I did not drink, but I was totally, I was crazier than when I got there. And so then I had to make a pact with her, with God. You know, the first step is, I can't. I just can't do it anymore. The second step is, I think I'll let him. And I didn't know about letting him, because I hadn't trusted. I hadn't trusted people, places, or things, much less a God of my understanding. But I found out I needed a God of my understanding, and that I needed to trust. So when they had the second step, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Oh my God, I'm insane. Oh dear, now what do I do? She said, don't drink. Don't drink, go to meetings, listen, and do what you're told, do what you're asked. She didn't say told, she knows I would have walked. She was so good to me. She knew I was walking a tightrope. She knew that my mind was going other places because she knew how sick I was. Then, as time goes on, then there's that third step where you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him. Oh my gosh! The God of my understanding. I had not had a God of my understanding. I had a God that my parents had, and he was very vicious. He was mean and calculating. And that's when I always felt like I was going to go to hell. But I was told that the God of my understanding could be whatever I made it, and to pick him. So now my God is loving, kind, compassionate, just like you. He accepts me as I am, flaws and all, warts and all. And I know today that his love was always there. I just couldn't see it because I didn't want to. I kept wanting to be a smartass. When I went to an outside doctor, she said, Vivian, all you know is sarcasm and cynicism. She said, that's how you've been getting along for years, and you need to knock it off. Because that's not going to help you anywhere in life. So I had to start learning how to say thank you, not just to God, but thank you to other people, and not be ready to tell people off, because that wasn't how you operate in life. I did not know that. You would have almost thought I came from the streets the way I talked. And I wasn't kind. I took inventory quickly, and then I always decided that I wasn't part of. Because, you know, when I got here, I felt like I was helpless, hopeless, and worthless. I didn't measure up, because I didn't measure up all of my childhood. And I don't even know today what that would mean. All I know is that I had those feelings, and I knew that I was carrying that. For me, it wasn't like one and done on anything. I had to experience, and I had to keep coming to meetings. And then I got into the fourth and fifth step with her, you know, making that fearless and moral inventory. And I thought, okay, we're going to do the shock and awe treatment. We're just going to throw it out there. And you know, and I did that, and she says, are you done? And I thought, oh shit, oh dear, what does she want? So I started to talk about things that I thought I would never talk about. And you all had already said that you're as sick as your secrets. Oh, I had a lot of secrets. And I had to let it go. But it didn't happen in that first time. But that first time, when I did that, and she didn't tell me to go away, she put her hand across the table and she said, Vivian, wait till you hear my story. And that broke the ice completely. You all had already told me you don't have to be alone again. You had told me you would be there for me. I didn't know how people were there for other people. You talked about unconditional love. I had no clue what that was, obviously, because I've been married so many times. I didn't know how to be married. I didn't know how to be sober. And I get here, and those things happening, and I'm doing the steps, finally. And at the end of that time, you know, that's when I did another surrender. And I started all over with the steps, and I took instruction. I finally did what was told, what was asked. You know, now they say something about you're voluntold. I've been voluntold a lot. But I'll tell you what, it worked. I followed instruction, and she loved me through everything, no matter how ugly it got. And then, so at that point in time, at 4.5 years, then I was alone by myself for like 3.5 years. By that time, I'm about 8 years sober, and this time I'm sober. And I had decided to move up to the foothills because I had become a workman's comp case at the university. And I figured nobody would come visit me up there. Some people were worried that I would be isolated, but I just wanted to be away so that I could get myself. And then I would go down to meetings, I would do the thing. And then the man who helped me move up there used to be a salesman for me at Fresno Cable TV, of all things. And he was working the counter at the Alano Club. So life gets funny. He helped me move all my stuff up there. I went to the Alano Club to thank him. And then a man that I had known in the program and another man, they introduced me to Tim St. Louis. We sit down and talk, and Tim starts, you know, Tim was a big book dumper. He starts telling me to read pages 32 and 33. And then he gives me his phone number. And I'm a great alcoholic woman. I gave him mine. So that's how we started talking. We started meeting with all of you for coffee, for whatever, to the movies, for events. You know, I had already learned how to be of service. She had told me to be a greeter. I said, why? And she said, why not? Back in the day, you cleaned the ashtrays and you made the coffee and all that stuff. But all of those experiences got me busy, got that head of mine to slow down. And by reading the big book with my sponsor, and by listening to you share, I would hear you share your experience, strength, and hope, and sometimes your crap, because we all have it. And I realized I'm not alone, and that nobody was chasing me out of AA. Nobody was telling me I didn't fit. In fact, you were telling me to come back. At the end of my drinking, you know, nobody was asking me to come back. But you greeted me, you hugged me, you showed me what to do being a greeter. You showed me what to do at an event. You showed me what to do when I went out to do service work. When I went on 12-step calls, I thought that was phenomenal. Oh, I get to go see a drunk. You know, I was excited because I watched how you did what Bill and Bob did. You went out one-on-one and you helped somebody. You gave them the message and you let them decide. Some don't decide. Some decide and then they decide not to stay. Some die because they can't stay. Some go out and die just because. But then there are those of us that stick. That's why I had to keep coming to meetings, she said. You've got to stick with the winners. And those are the people that suit up and show up all the time. They are just not one and done. They don't just show up for an hour or so. They're the ones that are there. They're the ones that will give you their phone number. And she said, in your case, you will get women's phone numbers. And so I had to do that those first few years, you know, until then I met Tim. And then she says, oh my. And then, that year that I met Tim, we got married that December. We met in April, we got married in December. He had 7 years and I had 8. And by the grace of God and the help of you people, that was a marvelous thing. I got to have a personal relationship that was good with someone who, when he said he loved me, he meant it. He didn't put conditions on stuff. And he told it like it was. And sometimes he'd tell me stuff that I didn't like. And those would be the days I say, you know, today I don't like you. I love you, but I don't like you. But we learned to work it out. I had never learned to work anything out with anybody in my life. And he was a good man. He did all of those wonderful things. You know, he had 2 sons. I had 2 sons. but they weren't with us in the beginning. And as time went by, his younger son got in the program. A lot of you know him. And as time went by, my younger son came back into my life. They called me up one day to let me know that they were pregnant. They weren't married, but they were pregnant. And I cried, because when I got that phone call, I never thought I'd hear from that son ever again. And my sponsor had always told me, Vivian, you can never say never. And what you need to start doing now, like she used to tell me, you know, you could call, I used to call and whine and cry a lot. She said, why don't you call me on a good day? Because I didn't know how to do that. And then when they came, she said, you know, you need to start learning how to be happy for other people. That if somebody gets a new job, they get a new car, their kids come back, their wife comes back, whatever is going on, you need to help share the joy, and just not, it's not just for you. You have to have joy for other people. Now I get what this thing with God is all about. You know, God has helped me so much, and I had no idea it was Him, but He was helping me all along. And I'm dense, it's taken me a long time. But by Him stepping in to my life and me allowing it, and then me using Him, I learned to say thank you, and I learned to say okay, because sometimes His answers are yes, no, maybe, and I think you got to wait. So I've done all of that with the God of my understanding. But His will, not mine, is so much stronger and so much better that when I start doing things, when I call any sponsor that I've had, and I go, I've been thinking, I have always been told the chapter is into action, Vivian, and it's not into thinking. And isn't that the truth? But as soon as I think I know something, I want to tell you about it. Or I want to tell you that it's a great idea. And then I find out that I need to burst that bubble and pop that balloon or whatever it is. And, you know, those are the truths that happen. But getting into the program, we went to all kinds of conferences. I really got into all kinds of service work. And when different events came to town, we would be a part of it. You know, in one of the conferences, I have to share this, and I've shared it so many times. There was a father who was the retreat master, and he said, you know, there's two things. There's the good news, and there's the bad news. And the good news is that God loves you. And the bad news is that God loves everyone equally, and I laughed out loud. It was like an aha moment. Oh, that's right. There's other people in the world, not just you, Vivian. But I heard that. I mean, it's like it sunk in. Obviously, I haven't forgot it to this day. Because it meant something. I needed to hear things that meant something. Because that was new and different for me. That God is there. When I heard you say that, and you'll pray for me, and I used to think, yeah, right. But you know what? I needed to knock off that attitude. That's something I had to work out. There was an older man in the program a long time ago. He would call me on my AA birthday because he would golf with Tim. And Dave would say, happy birthday, AA, always alcoholic, and don't you forget it. You know? I want you to have a great day. But that's just how he said it, and he'd hang up, even when he moved away. And God love him, he's probably in heaven now, I don't even know. But it's those kinds of things that bring it full circle, that you get to know that we are here, we are touching lives. Bill and Bob knew what they were doing. You know, thank God for those men. And just think, after all these years, look at all the sobriety in this room, and all of us that are touching each other. You know, remember, Pacific Bell used to have that line, reach out and touch someone. I think that would be a good one for AA. Plus, I'm old, and I remember Barbara Streisand. She had a song out, that was called. People who maybe are the luckiest people in the world. And I think we're the luckiest people in the world. Now that I'm here and I've been here a while, I'm grateful. Oh, I remember when I went to the Ark and that woman said, I think it was Lorraine who said, one day you'll be a grateful alcoholic. And I remember thinking, oh yeah, right. Today I'm a grateful alcoholic. And today I'm grateful for everything that has gone on. And I need to look at the time because I don't know what kind of time I got. Anyway, getting married to Tim was an event all in itself. Some of you who knew him, he had a very dry sense of humor. And a lot of times I didn't get it. And he said, oh my God, don't take yourself so seriously. You know, that's Rule 62. So I had to learn to lighten up a little, you know, and I thank God that over the years I have. But sometimes my humor is a little grim. But we did good. And his kids and my kids, you know, we wound up being good, but we wound up buying property and lived in a mobile home up in the foothills. And if you can believe it, we had goats. I have pictures of me with the goats. A city girl. I wanted to be in the country. I wanted the country life. And what I found out in the country life was that I would go down to work, I would drive down the hill, and I realized that God's handiwork is everywhere. His handiwork was there when I got here, but I hadn't seen it until the day I took that first drive down the hill. I saw the sun rising. I could either see the fog down there or I could see the fog where we were, wherever it was. But you know what? I got to appreciate all of it. And you know, you say, stop and smell the roses. Just stop and enjoy it. Don't take it for granted because life is short. None of us know when the expiration date is. And back then, you know, I was thinking, you know, you think when you're younger, you think that you're going to go forever. And back in 2001, Tim got throat cancer. And you know what? The men in this program found out when I would leave for work, I would take Tim to his chemo. They would show up at chemo, sit with him, and bring him home until I arrived. And that took like 4 months, and he was out of the cancer of his throat. That was an ordeal. But you know what? You all taught me to be there for somebody. Especially to be there for this somebody that I love with all my heart. And then he got out of that, and I said, I think we need to move out of the foothills. He said, I thought you wanted to stay here till we died. I said, well, at the rate we're going, that's what's going to happen. So we moved to town in a mobile home park, so we would be in town. He could go to his meetings. He could go to the doctor. I worked, and sometimes I got resentful. You know, I think, oh, shit, I got to go to work today. But he gets to go have fun with all of the AA people. But you know what? It didn't make any difference. We were living life. And we took trips. We went all over the place as much as we could. His cancer got worse. And as you know, he died in February 16th of 2012. And he died of end-stage COPD and lung cancer. And I have to tell you, I had melanoma in between, but none of my stuff was big. I always thought, none of my stuff, I just trudged through everything. But that day he died, I took him to the hospital that one night, and they came out and told me he wouldn't make, the people in his condition would not leave the hospital. So I had to call his sons. And the next day, he was on a ventilator when I got back to the hospital. Gary L., his sponsor, was there. His brother, who was alive at the time and was the attorney, he was there. And then in the afternoon, all these people showed up and they started telling me, you know, all of his organs were going. He was on a ventilator. I didn't even know if he could hear me. And then when the doctor across from me and everybody looked at me and he says, you've got 60 seconds. And my head's going, 60 seconds for what? His brother goes, and I said, you know, it's time for Tim to meet God. He's been getting ready for God for a long time. And he did. He got to go back to his Catholic religion and his sobriety. He got to make peace, not only with his family, but with everything. And I watched that. I got to be there to witness that. You know? It can't get any better than that. And then, 2 years later, after he's gone, you know, I go to the Alano Club. The Alano Club's a special place. And at the Alano Club, about 2 years after, and over at a meeting at St. John's, one day this man named John came out, and he goes, "Has your husband been gone a year?" And I said, "Do you have a year?" And he says, "I have two." And I said, "Well, Tim's been gone for two." So John and I started talking, and that was in 2014. At the end of 2014, we took a trip to Texas to go visit my older son. We just went to visit, and we got to see his sister in Missouri. And we did the same thing that Tim and I did. We went to coffee with people. We went to events together, everything AA. After Tim died, I think I was on a speaking circuit. Everybody was asking me to speak, and I didn't know why. And I got to witness that. And I remember being at a meeting at the VA where Mike H. read, I think he read the steps, and John read the traditions. Anyway, it happens, we come back. We don't get married, though. We decided at our ages we're not doing that. We're healthy members of AA. But we came back from Texas, decided to move to Texas. We each sold our home. He sold his first. I don't know how that happened. But you know, God does wonderful things. I took my son and my two grandsons. By the way, I have two sons, grandsons here. One's now 21 and the other is 29. And I told them what was happening. And you know, at that time, they were 11 and 17. And they said, "Granny, those grandsons in Texas have never known you. It's time they need you." They gave me their blessing. That can only happen if you're sober. That could not have happened otherwise. And they had witnessed my sobriety. Those grandkids never saw me drink. They were not, that was not the, my son did, my younger son and my older son. They got the worst of me. But my older son is the one that encouraged that trip. We went, and then we wound up moving there, August 3rd of 2015. A year later, we moved in with him. By that time, we found out that John had all kinds of cancer. He had the same cancer that Tim had, but he had more in different areas. But we found a fellowship in McKinney, Texas, and I got to tell you, AA is everywhere. It's everywhere. Those people were wonderful. And when John needed treatment and things needed to be done, those women came to the house and gave me meetings. By God, that was wonderful. They came and did it. I know, I feel the air. I think I'm in heaven. They came and gave me meetings. We did all the things there that we did here. We went everywhere. We took trips. We did everything we could. We got to see more of his sister because she was closer to that part of Texas. And you know, even though I was born in Texas, it's not my home. It's not my home. My home is here. And after we went from Texas, my son got a job in Virginia, so we had to go to Virginia. By 2019, we were in Virginia. And we get to Virginia, and we find out my son is not one of us. He always swore, "Mom, I'm never going to be like you." But now he wanted something to do with me. Because he liked what he saw. He liked what he heard. He knew I was not the same mother. And we went to Virginia. He got diagnosed with kidney disease. And he went to dialysis, and then he wound up doing dialysis in the house. But I was always busy. We were always busy going to meetings, going to events, going to stuff. And the people in Virginia were the same way. In each place, I had a sponsor. I like to find the down and dirty sponsors. Carol knows. And I remember in Texas, the lady sat next to me. She's 91 years old now, and she's got 53 years sober. And I just got a picture of her up at the podium getting her 53-year chip. And then the lady in Virginia, she sat down next to me, and she shared. And when they shared, I knew. I turned right around, and I said, "You're it. You're my next sponsor." And you know, they didn't deny me. I think they were afraid. But that is how it works. When you hear what you need to hear, to me, it's that thing I hear. You don't know until you know. And I knew it. I felt it in my bones. I needed you, and I needed to stay connected. Well, then 2020 came, and so did COVID. So then that meant Zoom meetings. I get on Zoom meetings, and I have to tell you, early COVID, where there was no medicine or anything, of the four of us, I got COVID, and I got it worse. I was sick for a month. I lost the feeling in my feet. I lost all my nail beds of my fingers. I was miserable. But I would find those Zoom meetings. And one day, I got on this Zoom meeting called the Lifeboat. And I saw these people that I sobered up around. And I thought, oh my God, there is a God, and He's got me. So I started going to those. I was going to Zoom meetings in Texas to stay connected to those people and those women. And then I found you. And then when things got crazy, and then John, his cancer kept getting worse, but we plowed through it. But it was only by the grace of God and the help of you people. Because he did the same thing that Tim did. He relied on his higher power. He was ready to meet his maker. And he thanked God every day for his sobriety. And he was proud. Like Tim was proud to die sober. You know? Tim's buried. His ashes are up at the military cemetery. And then what happened was John passed away in the same month. In February, on February 4th of 2022, Tim passed away February 16th of 2012. And I'm here to tell you that by doing that again, with a man who was so courageous, with a second man who was so courageous, and who loved this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it rubbed off on me. It has made an imprint in my life that I can never forget. And so if you're here for anyone, stay here for them. Stay for yourself first. But when you're out there reaching out to touch someone, touch them. They need you as much as you need them. Because I started sponsoring women, by the way. That became my purpose after John died. I sponsor women all over the country. I got a lady from Chicago who came to my 40th birthday party here. She showed up at the party. Do you know how special that is? And she even came to Virginia to meet me in person. And then the women from Texas. And then these women, they did on my 40th birthday, they had a get-together, and they put a little computer thing up that when I walked in, they all jumped up and started singing happy birthday or whatever. And on the computer were these women from all across the country celebrating my 40 years. I'm telling you, we are special. Our sobriety is worth everything. People need to know it. They need to hear it. And they most of all need to see it. We have to show them that it works. And Shane always says, it works, it really does. Oh, for God's sakes, it's been working for a long time in my life. And then when John died, I stopped driving 6 months later. And I told my son, he says, "Why, Mom?" I said, "I have a fear." And I always told myself if I ever had that fear, I would not drive. I said, "I can't drive." So when they went to go get a new car, they traded in ours and did whatever. I said, "Just don't put me on anything. I need to do this for my own peace of mind." Well, then that same year, in 2022, I went to the AA picnic. Everybody has AA picnics. I went to the AA picnic. I come home, and the big 17-year-old lad, I found her dead in the backyard. And that was special to me because John and I were taking care of that lad from Texas to Virginia. And that dog became very special to John. And then I took care of her after John passed. And then 6 months later, the dog is gone. And I'm thinking, okay. So I keep going to meetings. I got more people coming to get me. You know, I remember after John died, they said, what do you need? You need food? I said, oh God, look at me. I don't need food. I said, I want some grapevines, and I want a hug. And a bunch of them showed up at the door with grapevines and hugs. And they said, we'll take you anytime you need to go. Our meeting was 25 miles away. They would pick me up and bring me home. That is the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. People don't do that if they don't care about you. They don't reach out and touch you that way. Then, in July 24th of 2023, that's 2 years ago, folks, after doing all this wonderful stuff, I had noticed that my son wasn't looking well, but at the same time, not thinking anything. And, you know, he did great accounting work. He did taxes and stuff for big companies. And I remember listening to him when somebody was asking him something one day, what is it that you can do for me? He says, I can keep you out of jail. That's how good he was, because he meant it. And Michael and I have to tell you, we got to reconcile. We had so much fun. And sometimes he'd say, Mom, let's go to lunch. It's a mommy and me day. And I'm thinking, he's 55 fucking years old. But it was fun. And we did it. We got to do it. But on July 24th of 2023, my daughter-in-law said, oh, I've got to leave. I'm going to go upstairs, because sometimes he'd go upstairs so he wouldn't bother anybody. And she found him dead in the bathroom. He did not die of the kidney disease. He died of congestive heart failure at 55 years old. And after she called 911, she left the upstairs. So I had to be there when the paramedics came, then when the funeral home people came. I have to tell you, that was very hard. I never dreamed that would happen. But what I know today to tell you is that because I was sober, and he and I got to touch base together, we got to do life together and enjoy it. I wasn't the raging alcoholic mom that he remembered. And I knew that he loved me. And we did all these crazy things together. Those are the things I'm going to remember. Because I want to honor their lives. Like I want to honor anybody that passes away in Alcoholics Anonymous. Tim and I've been to a lot of AA funerals. Whether they drank again or not, it doesn't make any difference. They're people. And they lived a life. And I needed to honor that. You taught me that. When I got here, I wouldn't have honored anybody. Because I thought I was all that. But I got to do that. And the day after he died, my daughter-in-law nicely tells me, I think it's better that you leave sooner than later. So I went upstairs and ordered a pod so I could pack whatever I could pack. My younger son here in California, he called me and he said, Mom, get your ass home. But you know what had happened when I was on those Zoom meetings? Because the day John died, I got on Zoom. The day Michael died, I got on Zoom. The people from California were all saying, come home. This is where you belong. And this is where I belong. I have not had any kind of a... I mean, I had a good life in Texas and a good life in Virginia. But this is where my life is, because I didn't have one in Texas. I haven't had anybody close to me for a long time that took me by the hand and loved me where I was. You loved me where I was, no matter where I was. You said, it's going to be okay. And by God, even though I cry a lot, it's okay. And like Carol says, it's okay right now. And that I am enough. I have enough. And I can't remember the other. Oh, and I do enough. Oh, yeah. I needed prompting. But I have to tell you, these are not tears of sadness. They're tears of joy. Because that's all I know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not be alive if it weren't for you. If it weren't for you introducing me to the different things I needed to learn about life. I needed to know that it was okay to make mistakes. And nobody was going to rip my hand off. That I could get things done. And nobody was going to tell me I was terrible. That you weren't going to beat me up because I slipped up on something. In fact, now if I slip up, everybody laughs. And we're at a point where when I came back that year, my plane came out on a Friday night into Fresno. And when I got off that plane, I was afraid I couldn't walk all the way from the thing. I practically ran to get to the baggage unit, and they already had my bags together. I told this guy, how did you know? He says, well, you have all these colorful things on them. And my grandson, Drew, came with my great-granddaughter. I have a great-granddaughter and a great-grandson that I had not met yet. There you go. There's the extension of the family. My family's small, but by God, I'll take them. And they were there to meet me that night. I stayed at their house for two nights. They wanted me to live there, and I said, no, your house is too small. And what happened was my son came, and he said, Mom, we've got the extra room. You're coming. So that's where I am today. And I still operate out of there. They respect my AA. And what's really funny, they'll come to the door and knock to see if I'm on a meeting or if I'm going on a meeting, if I'm on Zoom, or if I'm on the phone talking with women that I sponsor from all over the country. They know that you mean the most to me. They know that you are my heart and soul. They are too in their own way. And we've got other issues. But so, you know, I've learned that thing of restraint of tongue and pen. Because I live with my family. You know, we don't always agree, but I can make it work. You taught me that. You taught me that I don't have to be mean and nasty and say rude things. Because what does that do? It destroys the relationships. I have learned to build relationships here. Whether it be with the women I sponsor, the people that I meet in AA, you know, and I can honestly say now that there's another Eskimo in my life, you know. And he couldn't be here today because he's got COVID. Anyway, I'm just here to tell you that life goes on and that we are not a glum lot. And it's a miracle. I look at all of you. I know so many of you for many, many years. I've watched you, and I've watched you grow. I've heard you speaking lately. I've heard you in meetings. I see that you are doing the deal like I was asked to do the deal. And you're not doing it, you know, shrugging your shoulders. You're doing it with vitality, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. The vitality to still do it. Like I told my son, as long as I can still walk, I'm not going anywhere. You know? And all of you, you keep supporting me. And even though I don't drive, I have no idea. I can't tell you how many women have come to pick me up Even a couple of men have shown up, you know? And that's a good thing. Because when we do this the way we do this, and we show people that we're sincere, anything can happen. And I mean anything. You know, I remember a woman calling me one time, and she says, "Oh, I need to talk to you about relationships." And I said, "Are you sure you got the right number?" I said, "You know my history, right?" And she says, "But I also know your good history." And I said, "Yeah, you're right. Things changed." And then getting here, with all the things going on, I'm proud to say that I'm as healthy as I can be. I remember I went into a doctor's office not long ago, and he looks at me and he goes, "You can't be 77. And I said, "I love you no matter who you are." And then come to Valley Road, we're talking, and he says, "Do you know Bill W?" I said, "I certainly do. He's one of my best friends." Then I knew who he was. That's what I'm saying. We can't be quiet about it. You know, I don't broadcast it, but when something like that comes up, I'm ready to jump. You know, I was told to get in the wagon, not on it. Getting on it, I had a chance to jump off. Staying in it, I get a chance to stay. And what I like to say now, we used to hear when we went to Monterey, don't just come back, just stay. Stay for all of it, the good, bad, and the ugly. We're here. We will hold your hand through anything. And I don't know, are we? Somebody was supposed to say something. Anyway, I'm Vivian, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm so grateful y'all showed up. I didn't know how long I was. Thank you.
Let's thank our speaker and our readers again, please. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm going to go sit down.
Okay.